Well, surprise, surprise. We were supposed to podcast at 10 o'clock in the morning East Coast time. Instead, here I am at 12:17 a.m. Eastern time. Will is coming to you live from an airport, so that's very exciting. He'll be in and out with his audio there. I know he just muted himself, so hopefully this is good. But the specialists are back.
Yeah, we got like plane announcements. I think first class is now, they finished boarding. We're on to group two. So in case anyone was wondering.
I love that. Well, the good news is we're here and we're ready to podcast the traders. I like this show, man. Like, I know I complain about like things here and there, and I refuse to just sit here and be like, oh man, this is the best show ever. Like, I'm never going to do that. But I am really, really, really enjoying this show, and I'm loving the dynamic based on the people they've put on this season. I think they did a phenomenal job, and I'm just really happy with it all around. I think that the whole gamers versus reality, like just like housewives thing, is a really, really, really good element to have in this season, as opposed to gamers versus nobodies, people who don't know how to play reality TV. I think this is an excellent element. Phaedra is a great person to have in there. Parv is such a good person to have be this person, because Parv is so subtly aggressive all the time. I mean, watching her play tonight, I was like, damn, Parvati's playing Survivor and everybody else is playing the traders or pretty much playing nothing. So yeah, that's it. That's what I got to say. Will, are you in a position to speak?
Oh yeah, of course. I'm like defaulting mute until you finish what you're saying. So don't assume that if I'm muted, I'm not good to go. I might say this is the best episode of the show that we have ever seen, that this might be the solely greatest Traders episode. I sped through season one. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember like individual episodes. I remember there's being some big moments and big reveals, but like, to me, we praised the Chalice so much last week. It was interesting how they do this. They split the Chalice over two episodes just to give it its due and its love. So it's like, we can all kind of salivate it over like, who's it going to go to? And then we start the episode, like we're right in it. We're right in this really, really impactful scene, this twist that we already loved, and we got to see the outcome of it. And then how that continued through the whole episode with breakfast being like, we're going to have the traders come in first. We haven't seen that before. They all get together early and they're alone. Like, that was so fun to see that Ekin Su comes in when we think she's been murdered. Cause I know last week they had said, hey, this is like this poison takes a while to take effect. Mm-hmm. And now we're like, but we still, like, even though we were told that, like, that wasn't top of mind for me. Like, I wasn't thinking going to this, oh, it's a long lasting poison. Mm-hmm. So I was expecting Ekin Su to die right there. So I think all of that was really well done. And then I'm getting an announcement. So Phil, I will toss it to
I'll
you.
I'll take care of it. It was funny because my wife was actually the one who said, oh yeah, didn't they say something about the poison? And she wasn't saying like clearly. So I was like, what are you talking about? And then Ekin Su came in and I'm like, oh, maybe we missed something. Maybe this actually was given to somebody else at a different time and we just didn't notice. And then instead it turned out that like, no, like Ekin Su got it, but it was the slow acting poisons that we could see for the first time, maybe in the history of the show, an actual decision in the challenge for the traders. And we haven't really seen this where we, like, obviously Dan was not going to be like, oh, maybe it's Ekin Su, and Phaedra wasn't going to do that either. And then Parv was another person laying in the coffin, so she couldn't. But for the first time, we actually saw the traders have to say, do we go for the money or do we just go with what the group is thinking? And that
it was barely a choice though. Like, I still, I want to give it this episode its praise, but like the challenge still for me, I have like a lot of questions. And like, what was its significance? These questions were kind of lame. Like, what color shirt did you wear in like the last challenge? Like, I don't think that's all that difficult. I think here the number one thing that I've always wanted to happen, Phil, we've talked about this, is the people on the show being like, hey, there's this many people from this franchise or this show. One of them has to be a traitor. We kept saying they couldn't use that. They couldn't say that. And so now that we have Parv actually saying, hey, there's four housewives here. Like, there's all these Bravo people. One of them has to be. I'm so glad that that finally came to the light of the show, that we're actually seeing that have an influence, because we know it always has been.
Yeah, and it should be more of an influence. And what I was more saying with this coffin thing is, while it really was kind of like a half-assed, oh, they're working towards it. If now at the end of the game, and we know that they probably won't do that this season, but I do think that the traders and Peacock should consider maybe starting it off being like, you could win up to $500,000. and actually making it where these challenges do mean something and that you don't get the money. Because I think that this is an interesting little twist, or maybe it's thrown in there of like, hey, traders, if one of you correctly picks the person tonight, you will automatically get $5,000 that you walk away with or something. Cause we've kind of, we've been watching The Trust, which is the Netflix show, and they do interesting things with that, where it's like, if you can convince people of this, you get a certain amount of money. I think the traders could do something like that, because this coffin idea was a good idea, but it didn't give you enough incentive to go outside of what the group was doing, because you know, at the end of the day, you're going to get to make up the $20,000 later on in the game.
Yeah, and I think this challenge was all about vibes. Like, the whole funeral vibes, I love it all. I like that they're dressed up. I like the carriage. I like the procession. It's just the questions didn't seem like they had any meaning. They were too easy. Were we always going to end up with three coffins? Like, I didn't get all that. Can you explain to me, like, what I guess they were narrowing down?
Yeah, so here, murdered? I'll jump in because you're getting a good announcement there. But for me, I love this. I love, we're like covering more shows and stuff now. And so like Will has to do this in an airport because he has to fly at some point, but hey, The Traders is on. But so what I thought was stupid about these questions, I thought the questions were going to be a little bit more meaningful. I thought that the questions were going to have a little bit more purpose. I thought it was going to be like, hey, like I like the bananas question. I actually thought the bananas question was a good one. Now, obviously it was with the challenge stuff, but I think it would have been fun to kind of do like a callback to maybe like day one of, you know, they do like a little something, because it was, who did Johnny Bananas trust the most? So of course it's Trishel, and it's
well, he was there for such, you know, he was barely there. And so obviously it's, and I think they picked questions that they knew they'd get right so that they could get down to three coffins. And like, is there a world where
they
like,
needed three?
Yeah, if they didn't get the, is there a world where if they didn't get these questions right, they like show up and there's like 19 coffins or like 15 coffins or something? It's like, I don't think so. I think that's why the whole challenge of procession didn't really mean anything until we started voting. And by the time we started voting with the roses, like if you're Dan or Phaedra, you have no choice. You have to go with the group. It really isn't a choice. I wish the choice would have been, I don't know. It just kind of ends. And I guess, I mean, the production did pick the three people that would be there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess you want MJ there. I don't know. But you know what everyone's going to pick.
Well, and that's what bothers me, is that production picked it, right? It's kind of like production picks the traders. So that makes it so that the traders are predetermined before the game even starts, right? So because of that, production's got their hand in it. Now production has made it so that Parvati has to be one of the three people laying there. They made it so that Dan was one of the first people removed from this. Like there needed to be something else to it, where I guess questions weren't the right move to whittle it down to three. It almost should have been like, here are three people, or like, here's five people who it can be. Now it's up to all of you to determine who it is. I think that's a fun element. And if you vote for the right person, you add $20,000 to the pot. I don't think the stuff before that was necessary. It probably creates drama for the players. But another problem I had with this was, it's the same problem I have a lot with the traders, is us as an audience know what is happening. We already know that it is Ekin Sue. So the drama is for the players, but there's a, you know, dramatic irony to all of this, where we know more than the players do. But when you spend 20 minutes of an episode with something that we know that they don't, it's like, okay, but there's not actually that much drama at the end here, because as we've talked about numerous times on this show, the money means nothing to us. The money means something to them. So for us, it's like, oh, they might not get the 20 grand though. Isn't that dramatic? And it's like, not really. It's not that dramatic. So are you in a good spot? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think when I actually first heard about this show, and when I started season one, episode one, I actually was like shocked that we were told who the traitors were. I thought the whole point of the show was going to be, here's this group of people, three of them or two of them, however many, there's this group of traitors, and maybe they'll let us in on one or two. But like, part of the fun in watching it is the play along at home, where you're trying to figure out who's the traitor and who isn't. Again, that's very much like the mole, where the mole, there's one person the audience doesn't know, and you get to play along. You get to guess, oh, I could have sworn it was that person, but now they just got sent home. So I thought, and I do think part of the intention of this show, especially in season one, is like, we are not the mole. We want to make sure we are not doing things similar to the mole. And that's why like the traitors aren't trying to sabotage the challenge. That is a very mole thing. But I do think, like, if we go into season three and this show is established, it can say, look, like, we're gonna blur one of the faces when three of them meet, and we get to see two of them. We don't see who the third person is. I think that would be so much fun, and it brings the audience more into the game. You're playing along, whereas what you said here, this whole funeral challenge, which I think actually is like such a vibe, I think we didn't need the questions, and it's like, we're gonna randomly pick two people to go with Ek and Sue to be the final options, and it's like we pull them, I don't know, crows, black crows fly in and drop names and, you know, scrolls of paper, and Alan Cunningham like unfurls them or something. And we go straight there, and then we get a vote, and like, hey, we can sort of care whether they get the money or not. But it's like, it's all about the setting, the vibes, the music, the wardrobe that they're wearing. I loved all that. I thought it was great. It makes so much sense that they're going to the funeral of somebody. Like, it lines up with the whole vibe of the show and the aesthetic. So I'm fully in there. It's just like, these questions meant absolutely nothing, and they're just going to whittle it down to three anyway.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I do. You know, I think like that's what bothered me. I was like, oh, this could be a cool idea. And then it just wasn't. I mean, it did have the gold line, and here's Clutch Hat Trick. I'll throw it up here. Sandra saying Larsa looks 15 years older was wild. So I do like that we're getting the contrasting styles, not even just in terms of gameplay, but in terms of personalities. Of like, the housewives are all about their look. Sandra's walking around with the giant graveyard stone scar on her forehead right now because she smashed her head into it last week. And for anybody who's watched Survivor, which I'm assuming is anybody who's listening to this podcast, like the fact that Sandra almost like bashed her head open in a challenge and like could have been pulled from a game for that reason is hilarious, because she doesn't do anything in challenges ever. But like, even those different things, like the biting commentary, right? Sandra saying something like that is going to bother somebody like Larsa so much. And what is Larsa going to say to Sandra that's going to be the equivalent? She doesn't really have anything, because Larsa, what is going to piss off the other housewives, isn't going to bother somebody like Sandra at all. Sandra's not walking around acting like she's the hottest person in the world. So like, a line like that, it's just like the ridiculous, like, I know how I'm going to get my screen time. I know this is going to make the air. And as she would say, fuck you, I don't care anyway.
I mean, she knows exactly what she's doing with that line.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's great. I know. And that was perfect, because you got an announcement there. But yeah, I mean, she does that. And it was like when Phaedra was saying at the end at the round table, I don't know what Miss Parvati is doing. It's like, Parvati's playing Survivor. Parvati knows exactly what she's doing. Parvati wants to win this game without you, because if she can convince everybody that you're one of the traitors or that it's a housewife, and then they actually pick you, now Parvati looks like a good person and not like a traitor. And Parvati and Dan are kind of using you as a sacrificial lamb right now.
Yeah, but I get why Phaedra is absolutely pissed, and she came in hot, and I love that. I love that Phaedra was like, you cannot do that. And it's weird. I know when they become traitors, they take this like oath, and they're like, I will never reveal the other traitors. I will never reveal that I'm a traitor. But like, at some point, like, Phaedra can just be like, Parvati, I think it's you. Like, she can't say it for sure, but she can definitely push the vote. I always thought that was a very interesting aspect of the game, is that once we get towards the end of the show, that the traitors are going to try to get each other out so they get more money. I think this is just a little bit early from Parvati here, because she is firmly, hey, maybe she doesn't know Phaedra that well, but like, Phaedra is going to come after her. Like, I know the Real Housewives don't play games, but they play games. They play mental games. They like, they are like, even that's what Parvati's saying. They're always kind of acting or putting on, but they like, they're manipulative. Like, just because they don't have to vote each other out or like play for prize money or strategy, like, they are manipulative and devious. And like, that's why that show is, you know, so successful. And there's, you know, a franchise in every city in America, because they find entertaining, dramatic, manipulative people. So like, I worry for Parvati here that she came at Phaedra a little too early. Again, I love to see the reasoning. It makes so much sense. And I also appreciate that Parv is saying something, unlike Dan. I think if you do speak up a little bit, it does actually takes the target off your back. Now, don't be the ringleader like Larsa was. But if you can just chime in here or there and not be dead quiet, I think that's going to help you out. I just think Parv came at Phaedra a little too early.
I agree. I think sometimes the traders play a little too conservative. And I think we've seen that. We saw that in season one where, I mean, it's just Ceree. Ceree doesn't really speak up unless she needs to. And that's like, Ceree is, when she speaks, everybody listens, because it kind of comes out of nowhere. So that's just kind of what her personality is. Christian was always talking, and he was always in your face. So you're going to get differing personalities. I think something we're not seeing necessarily on TV that was coming to a head tonight was how much the Housewives are ready to take over this game. I think when you look at how many people are left in the game, And I want to get the numbers right. So one thing we didn't talk about yet was Deontay quit. And there was an article that came out on Deontay already where he said the game was like triggering things from his past. You got to like respect the decision. He was pretty much saying like his life growing up was very similar to like, we're going to accuse people of like really evil things they've done. And like, I guess his family situation was just terrible growing up. I mean, you know, it's kind of like a stereotype with boxers, right? But like boxers always seem like they come from like some really kind of like rough upbringing. So I don't know all the details. I didn't read the article. I just know that. So Deontay quit. So when we get down to it, I'm trying to get the exact number, but I think there's 16 people left. And if like five or six of them are the housewives, and if like eight of those people are from Bravo, because CT was talking about that at the beginning of the episode, I think the gamers, as they're calling themselves, start to get a little concerned that like, why aren't we getting rid of the Bravo people? And if the traitors are two Bravos and one of somebody else, they could just continue to vote out the gamers, and there's nothing the other gamer in that group can really do about it. So you only have one shot to get rid of them, and you're running out of time a little bit.
Yeah, but it's not like you can have an alliance of gamers versus Bravo and like, I'm just going to take you out whether you're a traitor or not, because at some point you're gonna have to look within and be like, there's probably a traitor that's housewife and there's probably a traitor that's a gamer. Like, there's like, and they're still in the game. So it's like, if I'm in the Bravo crew, I can't just like, let's just wipe all the gamers out. And sure, you're gonna get Dan and Parv, but now one of you is a traitor and you got to figure out who, and you might not have enough rounds left in order to do that. So I mean, we'll see how it plays out. I do like the intrigue in that it's very clear-cut alliances. We can like look at each player. I think last season I wasn't sure where like people really stood. It was a little bit more blurry. Again, I don't remember season one all that well, but I do think it's fun to have like franchises or like groups of franchises going against each other. I think it just makes for a better viewing experience.
Yeah, I agree. And I think right now with what you're getting with the Bravo people is they are willing to vote out everybody else. I mean, they were talking like, let's just vote out a guy. It's got to be an alpha guy. So we'll just keep voting out the guys. And eventually we're going to hit one. It's kind of like, I think what the Bravo people have done is they've said, yeah, one of us is probably a traitor, but if we get rid of all the gamer people, we're going to get rid of at least one or two. So why not just get rid of one of them? You know? And I think that's what they're thinking. And it's actually not a terrible strategy when you look at it from that perspective, because if you can say, hey, let's just decimate that side and then let's turn around and like figure out now who among us is a traitor. Right now, if they executed this strategy by final eight, they'd only have one traitor left and it would be Phaedra.
Or if they recruit someone else. But I could see this being thrown back in Parv's face. Like, I bet one of the survivor women is a traitor. Because that was our thought going in. Obviously, Parv was recruited, but I could see one of the housewives being like, yeah, I mean, Suri was the main traitor last season. Don't you think they would want another survivor woman, especially two legends like this? So so I know they're going after alpha males. How did Dan fall back under the radar? Because there was so much heat on him last week, especially in episode three, whatever the final episode in that first batch was. It's like they looked at this, they did this diagonal thing with the paintings, and it was like, it's Dan, and we're like looking at who's, oh, it's CT. It's like, those are the two alphas, and they're like, it's got to be CT, even though Dan was catching a lot of heat. So I don't know. He must have done something really well to kind of get everyone's trust back.
Yeah, I think Dan's just really good at playing under the radar. I think he's just super good at like, at pulling the Gabler, right? He's the alligator essentially of like, he comes up when he needs to, he goes down, and he realized the heat was on him. So take the heat off. And I think it's helping him that right now you have, what do you call it? CT, who is just what the housewives are going to look at as an alpha male, right? Cause like these housewives are married to NBA players and whatever else. I mean, they're all over the map, but it's that type of alpha male. They don't look at somebody like Dan Gheesling as an alpha male, even though he might be. But they're saying, oh, if they're getting rid of all the strong guys, then all of a sudden randomly Ek and Sue's going to go home. It's got to be this alpha guy who's like just randomly doing this and wanting to get rid of like, you know, who he views as threats to his own game. And I did like CT's response of like, I like that you think that like I think that lowly of myself that I would be worried about like these other guys. Cause CT, I mean, obviously none of these women have ever watched the challenge because CT can hold his own against the alphas of the alphas. You know, it's not that big of a deal for him. So I think Dan just kind of fell behind because Dan is so dangerous because Dan comes across meek and he's not, but he comes across that way. And he's so good at playing it. He talks with his little raspy voice. He never raises his voice. He's got gray hair now. He's so unassuming. And even when you start to point your finger at him, you're like, yeah, but like, I don't know. Well, there's bigger fish. There's always going to be somebody who's a bigger threat. But at the same time, there's always going to be somebody who's a little bit quieter. And so that's where Dan is doing a really good job. And I think the other men in the house, Kevin and CT, they're just too big of personalities and it's pissing everybody off.
Yeah, Kevin kind of came out of his shell tonight and we just got shots of him eating and eating over and over again. And I know they brought up he was an actor before, but it seems like people are really grabbing onto that, that, oh, wow, you're an actor. So you could play the traitor role really well, even though it's like this, like, Parv, we've seen you on Survivor, like you're a really good actress too. Mm-hmm. And same with a lot of these people. So we didn't see much from John tonight other than thinking, I was like, when he was the last one to come in at breakfast, I was like, wait a second. Are we going to flash back to like to Ekansu putting the chalice down and then John picking it up and having like a final swig before bedtime? Like, I actually thought we were going to flash back and something else happened with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought for sure too. I was waiting for John, and I kind of like that this season is doing a much better job of balancing all of the characters. Like Tamara, we were talking about last week, Tamara really wasn't there and she was sick or something. So she wasn't there really for episodes 1 and 2. But now all of a sudden this week, like she's a big part of this and all the housewives. And I think now when you have all reality stars, as it starts to dwindle, it gets so much easier to be like, all right, we got this one, we got this one. They're all going to find a way to get their screen time. Whereas when you're playing with half of the cast as newbies, some of those people just aren't going to come up to the surface. I mean, I watched that season 2 weeks ago. I can't remember 80% of the people's names who were newbies, which is crazy because like when it comes to this type of stuff, when I'm watching these shows, like I'm the person who, if I'm watching a scripted TV show, the credits come up. I look up who every actor is so that I kind of know because I can see what else they're in if I like them. That's the kind of person I am. I can't remember any of their names. I couldn't remember. We were talking about in the trust yesterday. I was like, it was Sari, Quentin, and I cannot remember the third person's name for the life of me. I can see them. Andy, maybe? I don't know.
Cody?
Was it Andy?
Cope. I think you told me it was Cody.
It wasn't Cody.
As a traitor. And then it became.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. I'm talking about at the end of the season. I'm not talking.
At the end of the season. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, though, when it's the new players. So that's what makes it interesting. It's like a player like John, who's a politician, and we live in 2024 where politicians are like, you know, everybody's going to talk about politicians and look at them negatively. And he's like right at the forefront of we got to get rid of him. And then tonight it's like, yeah, it's probably not John. Like, let's look at somebody else. And I think a show like The Traitors forces people to constantly be looking at other people, which is always a good time.
Yeah, it does seem weird, though. Like, the people that go on the offensive, like, the most, like, someone like Larsa, who is putting, like, a coalition together and rounding up votes and tossing out names, like, those people tend to go home. But the longer this show goes on, aren't people going to realize, wait, those people are, like, never the traitors?
Never.
Like, that's not how traitors play the game. Like, they always stay under the radar. So the person who's the loudest, and then eventually once that circles through, then the meta of the game is like, oh, if I'm a traitor, I'm going to be really loud and no one will think it's me. But it just seems like if I were playing this game, I'm like, Larsa's clearly, if she's like, if she's playing this hard, she's probably not a traitor. I don't know. The show we haven't seen enough iterations of it. And I know there are a ton of iterations around the world. I just mean, here in America, we haven't seen it enough. Someone did mention on our last podcast or premiere recap that the faithfuls have won other versions of this show. Mm-hmm. So maybe the format isn't as broken as we think it is. I think also it comes down to a lot of like, when do you cut off the recruitment period? Mm-hmm. We've talked about how late it felt last year. Because I imagine if a traitor, you know, if Parv or Dan or Phaedra go out, you know, within the next couple episodes, that number is going to go back to 3, probably within, I don't know, within the next episode. Like, you're going to have another traitor in there. So that's the only thing for me, which makes it kind of like, okay, if we're always just going to replenish their team. But I'm interested to see, and I'm actually, maybe we should watch one of these foreign seasons. I don't want to know going in. But it'd be interesting to see the traitors pull or the faithful pull it off.
Yeah, especially if they get somebody out really early, you know, because that would really change things up. If they were able to get somebody out early and then we could see, do they immediately just put somebody back in? I think that I talked about it last week. I think there's triggers, right? I think at final eight, maybe there would be, that's when they bring in a new person. I think if somebody went out in the first two, three boots, they'd probably bring in a new person. But I think in the zone we're in right now, I think we probably have something like, I think if in the zone that we're in right now, I think like if somebody went home, I think they'd probably wait a couple episodes before they sent in, before they recruited anybody, which I think is how the show has to go. So I would be curious. We did get a lot of comments in the last episode. And so like, if you're watching this one, leave us comments, let us know. I mean, this is I've only watched the Traders US. So kind of let us know, like, you know, how it played out. I mean, don't be spoilery with names and stuff, but you can always give, you know, kind of context, because I'd love to know how it works.
Or don't say the season either.
Yeah.
The traders were able to get someone out in the first two episodes. And from there, they only got one more and were able to, but it's like, it is weird. It's cause like, I mean, what if the first three boots are like Par, Phaedra, and Dan? Like just, I know that's so unlikely, but like, what if that does happen? It's like, what do you have to give, you need a show. Like you need more than three episodes, or yeah. It's like what, like 18 people split the money. And it's like, that's not going to, you know,
they don't even get anybody. Like, they're not even getting 10 grand each.
No. Yeah. Yeah. If 18. Yeah. I mean,
a little bit depends. More. I mean, it's not much.
A little bit more. You're getting like 11 or 12 grand maybe.
Yeah.
And then you're getting like probably five of that after taxes.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I don't know. Then there needs to be a show. There needs to be a show. So I think that's the only thing where I'm just curious about it. And not that I don't like it. I think about it a lot with this show.
Yeah.
How like, what are the contingencies? Like, how would it all work?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. And like, I guess like it depends too, in some of these other shows, are they playing with newbies? Like in the Traders UK, is it all newbies instead of like returning players? Because obviously you know a lot about personalities. And a show like Survivor, you're always going to have, even if you don't watch Survivor now, like most of these housewives know what Survivor is. They've watched Survivor probably at one point in their lives, and it's known as a cutthroat, conniving type game. So that makes it a little tough too, because if you start doing this, you start looking at people like Dan and like Parvati. And if it starts to become a little obvious that, hey, they're going to do two gamers and a housewife or two housewives and a gamer, you can start going after the gamers first. And you might just accidentally, like if I went out there, I've never played another game, but I'd go out there and I'd say, okay, Johnny Bananas is the biggest personality from the challenge. Parvati is definitely a more interesting person to make the trader than Sandra. And Dan Giesling is known as playing like the greatest game of Big Brother ever. So like in my head, those would probably be the first three people I'd go for, because I don't watch any of the housewife stuff. So I might accidentally just say, hey, Parvati and Dan, and then Parvati and Dan get the vote. So yeah, it's kind of tricky. And I wonder how that actually goes.
Yeah. And honestly, thinking back to the Bananas elimination, like if I'm Dan and Parvati, I'm like, I kind of want to keep other game competition show players, especially the big ones. Like I'd rather have Bananas in the mix so that he can take some heat as a potential trader, because the Bravo women are figuring it out. Plus I guess Kevin's show is that on Bravo too. Like they're figuring it out, like it has to be one of these game people, and they've already knocked off a few of them. So it's like, I don't know what the strategy was with that. Who do you think they're going to murder next?
It's going to be very, very interesting, because you are going to have Phaedra. Phaedra blew it up tonight, right? Where she came in and said, Parvati, nobody likes you, which was so funny. And like, Parvati's one of those people who act like she's hurt by that, but I doubt Parvati gives a shit at all. I mean, we're watching textbook Parvati right now, which I'm all about. I mean, I'm pumped. My wife hasn't gotten up to Micronesia yet, and I was like, I just can't wait for you to watch Micronesia. Like, we're four seasons away, and now I just want to rip through 12, 13, and 14. We already watched China, so we can watch Micronesia. But I do feel like Phaedra might almost be willing to sacrifice one of the housewives, because it will make Parvati look really bad. And I think Phaedra is pissed at Parvati. And I do think that she might be thinking of it in that way of like, how can I get at Parv? Because if they vote out a gamer, the housewives look really bad. And they're going to get banished at the next banishment. But if they vote out a housewife, now all of a sudden there might be something to their theory. Is there a housewife that Phaedra is willing to go after because it takes the heat off of Phaedra. What Phaedra was worried about tonight is, hey, you blew up my game. And she's right. Parvati did.
What's Parvati's defense of that? Like, what is Parvati going to say? Like, hey, I just wanted to, like, put the pressure on the other people, not you specifically. I wanted to get out Larsa, keep it off us. And then, hey, maybe we swing and we miss and we go somewhere else. Like, is that kind of what the case she can make? Hopefully we get to see it next week. But, like, I wish in that moment we got to see Parvati at least defend the move and try to reason with Phaedra. But I'm kind of on Phaedra's side here. She totally put her on blast.
I think what ultimately is going to be her argument is all of your housewives are coming after the gamers, and I'm a gamer and Dan's a gamer. So we need to take some of the heat off of us because the target's going to come to us. There are five of you or six of you, however many there are. And again, I keep trying to find the number, but let's say there's five, right? There's five housewives. And then there's also Kevin who's playing Empire.
I think there's four housewives. Didn't they say that?
Four housewives and then MJ, right?
Tamara, Cherie, Phaedra,
Larsa, and then MJ is being lumped in with them because MJ
and then
is
Kevin's also Bravo.
Yeah,
so yeah, six. It's like a group of six now.
There's like a group of six,
group of five. Now that Larsa's gone,
I think that's where Parv's argument comes. Is like, we need to turn some of the attention to the housewives. It doesn't mean it's you. I never said Phaedra.
But in the terms of gamers, I mean, you have a good amount of gamers too. You have Dan Janelle from Big Brother. You still have CT and Fischel from The Challenge, and then you have Sandra and Par from Survivors. So you have six, and now there's actually more gamers than there are Bravo.
Well, John's not a gamer. Pete, where does Pilot Pete fit?
No, there's a lot of people in the middle. There's a lot of people that aren't either.
Yeah.
And so maybe when they're looking at murdering, they want to go for someone like that and keep this feud. I don't know. I think that would confuse people. If you get like Bergie, what's his name? Bergie.
Yeah.
Or John or Peter, like one of those random, someone who's more in the middle and not on, you know, either side. I think that, like, if that's what you want to do, if you're a trader, you just want to confuse the hell out of everybody. And like Ekansu was such a random, like, that's what I think really helped the traders tonight. And I know that they didn't like plan who they didn't all come together and decide. And Parv had to actually just like last minute, who can I fool here? But that ended up working out great for them because no one saw it coming. There was no rhyme or reason to it. And that's a big part of game theory, is if you can keep your decision-making process random, then nobody can read you. Like if you want to have an edge on someone at rock, paper, scissors, the best way to have an edge is to not give an edge. And so Phil, if I'm playing you in rock, paper, scissors, I have my phone and I just have a randomizer. Like I have 1, 2, 3. And if it's 3, I'm playing scissors. If it's 2, I'm playing paper. And so you do that. And then no matter what you do, you cannot read me. Whereas like if you're playing and trying to trick and fool the other person, you might give up a tell on what you're going to do. But if you don't decide it yourself, you're not giving it up. So I think it might be worthy for them to just keep it as random as possible. It's also a move from professional poker players. They need to bluff. You can't bluff every hand, or you're going to get called too many times and lose. And if you never bluff, you don't have good enough cards to win enough hands to advance. You have to bluff like in that right specific amount. And some poker players will have bluff cards. Like if a king of diamonds comes up, that frequency allows me to bluff at the right frequency. So I'm not deciding when I'm bluff. The cards are deciding when I'm bluffing. Mm-hmm. And I think the traders would be wise to use it's not very good TV where it's like, oh, let's spin a wheel or like flip a coin to decide who we're going to off. But if you're really looking at it, like what is the best strategy? I think keeping it random might be your best bet.
I agree. And I think that Phaedra, I think they're going to have the conversation. Look, the traders always ends on these really high notes, these really climactic notes. And then all of a sudden something will flip and it's like, okay, but Phaedra, this is the reason. And then Phaedra will be like, look, I still got my eye on Miss Parvati, but that's it.
It's funny for me though, because like I come into this in honestly all these shows, and we did the amazing casuals that one time. I'm gonna pause here.
That's fine. Yeah, so Will was gonna talk about the amazing casuals, which I honestly forgot we did. That was a long time ago. That was a really long time ago. But anyway, so when we're looking at the beginning of this episode, because we did jump right to the end. So I do think we have to talk about how the beginning impacted everything else. The fact that it was Ek and Sue did feel random, because it kind of was random. Now, we had talked about last week on our I'd even posted a short on YouTube of like us talking about how you thought it was going to be Janelle. I thought it might be Bergie. And everybody's like, well, it can't be Janelle because Janelle has a shield. Well, Janelle could be the only one who drinks from it and she just doesn't go home. Parvati knew she had the shield, but it could just be one of those circumstances where Parvati can't get anybody else to drink. So Parvati gives it to Ek and Sue because Ek and Sue was, you know, on a rant and it was easy to have happen. And it's a great moment because we have her saying, I love you. And it's like a nice back and forth. However, because of that, nobody knew it was going to happen. And Phaedra and Dan weren't even involved to the point where they didn't even know it happened. They didn't even realize Parv had done it. So it is really random, which is what was throwing everybody off. Now, how does Phaedra counteract that after this crazy banishment ceremony? Can she counteract that? Because what did you think about Parv ultimately settling on Ek and Sue? Do you think that because of how Dan and Phaedra reacted, should she have tried to find somebody else?
No, I think you have to do what you have to do, and you want to do it as discreetly as possible. And the way that she managed to do it in front of Dan, and Dan didn't even see, like, Dan knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. Like, Dan knew Parv had the chalice and had to plant this on somebody. And the fact that he didn't see, I mean, she did a really good job. I think it also helps that everybody was pretty liquored up. It seems like everyone was drunk. Like, everyone came in the next morning and was like, someone offered me a drink, but I can't remember. It seems like Ek and Sue was laughing a lot because when Alan comes downstairs and says one of you was poisoned in plain sight, I'm going to pause.
Funny, you might as well just keep talking because we're hearing the announcement. If you're going to Detroit, you better get in there. All right, Will's internet just died on him. So we got the announcement. Sorry, guys, again, that we're doing this. He's literally doing this from an airport. So hopefully he comes back in a second. But he's literally doing this from an airport. He was supposed to fly out. His flight got delayed by 3 hours. We're going to do this podcast in the morning. And now at that time, he's got to work. So that's not going to happen. I'll take this time to just say thank you to everybody who's listening. The first episode of our Traders coverage did really well. We got a lot of views on it. We got a lot of listens, and that was very much appreciated. If you're watching this now, go like the video, subscribe. As we said, like right now, it's just kind of tough with all the different shows that we're trying to jump in and do and kind of mix up. It's a little hard because we have to change times kind of on a dime. And so if you want to know exactly when we're going to be doing things, hit the subscribe, I guess the bell, the notification bell, so that you can be notified when this is going to happen. We did The Trust last night. That's actually a really fun show if you haven't checked it out on Netflix. But to get back into The Traders while Will is off finding a new spot, he just said he'll be back in 30 seconds. I really do think the Ek and Sue move by Parv was a great move. It's so random. It just worked out really, really well. And I think that because it was so random, because it ended up working out for them, it's going to look even better in the long term. But I really do think that Parv's move here, rather than trying to force it into somebody that everybody would have been okay with, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. And
she absolutely had to do that. And she was able to do it quickly. It wasn't like, hey, let me go get you a drink. Because then Alan comes in and outs Parvati, basically. I'm worried, like, oh my gosh, is Ek and Sue gonna be like, oh yeah, Parvati like poured me a glass of wine. I'm sure they're all pouring drinks for each other all night, so it's not like it appears worse to us as the viewer, and we get that suspense and tension. We're like, oh no. I mean, Phil, did you feel that way when Alan started explaining like beat by beat, like someone poisoned someone in plain sight? You're like, wait a second, like, she's gonna be outed. But then you think about it, it's like, oh, they're hanging out eating and drinking all day, like it could have really been anybody. But I think that's how great it was, because it's like Ek and Sue didn't even think of Parv. Like, oh my God, someone.
And Trishelle and Janelle both made facial expressions when Parv and Ek and Sue had their moment.
Well, that was, I think a lot of that was just to build up the suspense for us that she was going to get caught. But I think they're probably boozing every night like they do on these shows. And that's a good cover for something like this. Like, I don't think this would be a fun twist if everyone's like dead sober. And everyone's like got their eyes out and looking for it. Like, this only works when you allow the players, a setting where it's possible to pull off.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was worried there. I was really like, oh my God, Ekansu is going to be like, yes, I remember specifically Parvati. Like, now, and that would have been so lame and unfair. Like, then that twist, we've been like, oh man, we praised this twist, but now it just like cost Parvati our favorite the game.
And now here's my question to you. Do you think that they picked Parvati to be the traitor in the coffin because she was the one who ultimately handed the chalice to somebody? Do you think if Dan or Phaedra had been the one to hand the chalice, they would have put her, they would have put them in the coffin?
Who knows? I mean, yeah, I really don't know. I mean, that could make sense. It's like, then something they also put MJ in there, who is like, they know the group is gonna pick MJ. It's like, so you don't want them to get $20,000? Like, is that you're saving that money for a rat party for the crew or something? Like,
yeah,
I mean, I don't know. It's like the choices for that. I wish they were just random three people, or like a random two people plus Ekansu. Obviously, Ekansu can't be random, but yeah. I mean, we kind of went over that.
Yeah. No, but it sets up for what ends up happening later in the game, because that happening, Phaedra was not happy with it being Ekansu. She wasn't. She was like, and at first it felt like she was joking, but then
it was because she had voted
for her.
For Ekansu, yeah. Which again, I feel like it's like the reverse. You should think the opposite. Like for this whole game, you're trying to, the traitors are trying to blend in and act like faithful. So if there's like a really obvious traitorous move, it's probably not the traitors doing it. So it's like, she was worried because I voted for Ekansu and she got murdered, it's going to make me look like a traitor. It's like, no, a traitor would, if someone was accusing me, like Phil, if I wrote your name down on the chalkboard at the round table and then you die and they come, Will, you're the one who voted for him. You thought he was a, it's like, yeah, exactly. Like if I were a traitor, I would never out myself like that. Are you kidding me? That means someone's trying to plan it on me. Like, obviously.
Yeah.
So, and again, there's so little to go off here. One of the things that bugs me, and I don't want to be, again, I don't want to be super negative. We got some comments that were like, you guys hate the show too much. It's like, no, we like the show. But one of the things that does bug me is like, you defended yourself a little too hard. It's like, you went on the defensive. It's like, well, what else am I supposed to do? Like, am I supposed to just be like, yeah, I'm a traitor when I'm not? Like, what are you supposed to say? You're supposed to say, no, I'm a faithful. Like,
and
you're off base here.
I would almost be more concerned if, like, when Dan responded, so far Dan is the only one to respond to the criticism and the attack in a calm way, and he's the only one who's actually a traitor. So, like, you should almost be more worried about who is actually able to handle their emotions well. That's who you should be concerned about. Don't be as concerned about the people who are being emotional, because these people, they realize that their back's against the wall. They start saying, F you, I don't care, what am I going to do? And you've been wrong every single time. The loudest people are going home, and you're wrong every single time. So yeah. That didn't answer the question. Who do you think is going to end up going home?
Oh, I think someone in the middle. Like, I think they're going to get like, well, you know what? I think Kevin could be like a really, really strong option. Just because he's like Bravo, but not a housewife. So it's like, he's kind of in that clique that you're going against, but not fully. It won't piss off Phaedra. But again, Phaedra's voted for Kevin. So Phaedra might be, no, like you can't be that. The person I voted for twice. Like, so maybe not. Maybe I feel like it has to be someone in the middle. But yeah, like Phaedra, I don't think is going to want a gamer either, because that makes it look like a housewives at that front.
Yeah. So that's why I think somebody like Pete or Bergie could be in a lot of trouble this week, because they're not gamers and they're not one of the housewives. So I think that could be a problem for both of them, both Bergie and Pete. Ice X is in the chat here, and he actually did some research. He said two times one traitor wins, two times a faithful turn traitor wins, one time two faithful shared the win, one time three faithful shared the win. So actually, that's two wins. It's like 4-2. And he said that's the best research you come up with. But he also said the UK traders were able to sway the Black Roses to the murdered without bringing attention to themselves. It was slick. So we have seen this twist before, and they were able to make it work out for them in the UK version, which we have not watched.
But I think that heavily depends on what the options are. Like, MJ was such an overwhelmingly obvious option that it would have been really difficult, and the order, and like I think Dan went like sixth, so there's already like five roses on MJ. Like, no, he has no reason to be like, I'm going out on a limb here.
You know? Yeah. That's where what they needed to do is they needed to make the first person either Phaedra or Dan, and let them set the tone for what's going to come after that.
Yeah, but then it's like, now you're screwed. I think you have to just randomize it, like keep it fair.
As random as the three of them coming into the breakfast in the morning was?
Well, see, I actually like that. I think that was really fun just because it's something we haven't really seen before. And especially because Phaedra and Dan were not in on like what Parvati did. It was like a really nice moment for them. And then they get to all react to them coming together. Janelle has a great confessional. I love everyone who's sitting there. At this point, we don't know, you know, that's just a loaded interview question, I'm sure. It was just a great bite, though, that fit with the moment. I do think that, are you in agreement? I think Phaedra is going to have like the say. Like, I think she's pissed and she's like, you guys owe me one. You guys like, let me pick this person. So I think it's going to come from Phaedra who she wants to go home.
100%. I think they're going to let her choose. And I think the only one that I could see Parv pushing back against would be like, I think the two of them would push back if Sandra or Janelle were the names. Just because they're kind of their cover of like same show. We don't really want to reveal that yet. But
what about
I think
CT? Could she go CT?
I think Phaedra would vote out CT. And I think it would be a stupid move though, because then it's revealing that like OCT wasn't actually a traitor, which she doesn't want
to. You want to keep you do. I'm just trying to think because it's like you're kind of she doesn't want to get rid of a housewife because then there's fewer housewives left, and then she's one of a fewer number. And it's like, well, we know one of you. Like that is going out there. Like Parv did plant that. And so if you get rid of a housewife, you're just increasing the chances of votes coming your way and it landing on you. But if you get rid of a gamer, it's going to be like, oh, well, then clearly it's a housewife up there. So it's like, I think it really has to be. I do fear for Peter Berg. I just feel like we would have seen more of Peter Berg tonight.
I think the traitors is pretty random. Ek and Sue, we barely saw it all.
Yeah, but at least Peter and Bergie have had storylines that have been started that haven't had endings yet. Like, we haven't really seen where Peter and Kevin's weird strategy of voting for each other. Like, that we didn't pick up that thread whatsoever. I mean, maybe we heard very little from John tonight other than him, like, coming in at the end, like, yay! And it's just like, John's here. I could see John just catching a straight bullet, though.
Yeah. Sure. John's kind of like an easy... He might be an easy cover guy, though, like an easy shield just for a little bit because he's a politician and people are always going to be a little untrustworthy of that. But I do think that the smartest move for the traders right now is to say, we're not going to pick a side. And honestly, at this point, everybody knows that there's at least one housewife and there's at least one gamer who's involved in this. Like, they're all pretty much everybody.
You should have figured that out. Yeah.
And so for them to get rid of a middle person, it's signaling to everybody else there that like, yeah, the traders are so good. They're not going to reveal to you who's doing anything. So that's what I would do. But then again, maybe Phaedra plays it emotionally and she says, F you, I want to get rid of either Janelle, Trishelle, or
CT, Sandra. CT, yeah.
Sandra, one of them. Yeah. I could see that happening for sure. You have anything else that you want to add to this? I know you're about to catch a flight, so you're good. Give me a thumbs up. All right, he's good. I know that
I'm good. Yeah.
But thank you all so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this. I'm really enjoying the Traitor season 2. This night was a fun episode.
This is a really, really strong episode of the show. Yeah. I mean, the challenge thing, again, I like the whole vibes of the funeral thing. And then for players to finally come, the Traitors to be going at each other this early, I think is going to make for a very exciting season.
Yeah. So if you're enjoying it, like the video. Go ahead and subscribe to the channel so you can find out what else we're doing. If you haven't checked out our Trust episodes and you want to watch a show like in between now to keep that Traitors fix going, go watch the Trust. It's not the same thing as the Traitors, but it's still a pretty fun show.
The Trust got a lot better in the second batch of episodes. It did. I actually really, I've been like thinking about it more and more. Like, it's actually gotten to me a little bit. So yeah, if you're into this sort of thing, it's kind of Netflix's version of, it's not at all the same, but it's kind of the same schemey, devious vibes. It's a fun format. I do dig it.
Yeah. So go check out that. We only have 2 episodes up because they dropped episodes 1 through 4 and then 5 through 7 all at one time. So go ahead and check out that. If you're into something completely different, go check out the Phil and Will Show. We talk all about Secession, great TV. And we talk about NFL divisional round predictions. So that's
some scripted TV and some sports. So yeah,
a little who doesn't bit want that? Time. Yeah. And then on top of that, Survivor Second Chances too. Pre-40 Men. That was a fun podcast. If you haven't checked that one out yet, listen to us get to 41 names and then just have to start killing our favorite people ever. So that was a really good time. Yeah, and Alexa and I dropped a Bruce Perrault season 45 tell-all. We've literally had like the busiest week, and it wasn't supposed to be as busy as it was. So it's a very exciting time. Thank you all so much for listening. Let people know that we're doing the Traitors. If you're a huge fan of this and you have friends who don't watch Survivor but love the Traitors, let them know that we're doing this podcast because This one's here to stay. I think we have enough crossover. There's no way, Will, once we started the Traders, we're not getting out of this one. So thank you all so much, and we'll see you next Thursday night. There's your last announcement. Now we